The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merritt, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
From the crossroads of Merritt Avenue and Sunrise Highway in beautiful Merritt, Long Island, this is WGBB Sports Talk New York. Our phone number, 516-623-1240. Once again, 516-623-1240. I'm your host, Mike Guadone, joined as always by the man we call Cappy, Chris Caputo. Got a big show for you tonight. Looking forward to a Basketball Hall of Famer joining us. And then we'll talk a little Islanders hockey. Had some interesting things going on recently with them. New GM, number one pick. We'll be joined by Johnny Sticks, John Santa Maria, our intrepid Islanders reporter. But before any of that, Cappy, welcome to the program. Welcome back. Great to have you.
All right. Happy Father's Day to you.
Absolutely.
And glad to be back in the studio. Should be a fun night.
In tribute to Ralph Kiner, who we had his son on a couple weeks ago, Ralph once said on a Sunday broadcast, to all you fathers out there, happy birthday.
Just a way to keep people on their toes.
Well, listen, Ralph did it. Ralph did it like anybody, like nobody else, and could get away with it. That was just his sports lore. But yeah, we got the NBA Finals, and our Hall of Famer that we're going to have on tonight. We're very much looking forward to is Artis Gilmore. Artis played in the ABA. He'll be joining us shortly. He was a mainstay in that league. Then went to the Chicago Bulls, San Antonio Spurs. Finished up with the Celtics. Played about a half a season with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. You're interested to hear about that. But Artis's ties to this final really are when he was a player in the ABA, defeated the Indiana Pacers in the ABA Finals. So he's an old-time ABA guy. I'm sure he's probably pulling for them, I would assume.
Yeah, I think you kind of get to a point where your adversary and somebody that you play against becomes somebody that you pull for. So interesting point there. So far, I think the series has been kind of up and down where people think that, wow, Indiana wins a game, and then all of a sudden OKC wins the next game, and people are going, if OKC wins game three, especially on the road, this series is over. And then Indiana wins game three, and people are like, ooh, maybe I was mistaken. Maybe Indiana's better than we thought they were. Then OKC wins another game, and people are back on the Thunder bandwagon again. So I think it kind of becomes a little bit of an up-and-down wagon there, kind of just like the NHL Finals are, too.
Well, OKC was really a prohibitive favorite going into this. And I think what people forget sometimes is, when any team, any sport, makes the finals professionally, whether it's, World Series, NHL Stanley Cup, NBA Finals, these are good teams. So everybody kind of wrote off the Pacers. I think, not a huge amount of star power there as opposed to some other teams, but finished the season just on a roll, started out the season pretty poorly, but finished out tremendously, has had a great record within the playoffs, and, they're as good as anybody else. So, the surprise is the series is over, like you were mentioning. It's just not accurate.
Yeah, I think, the Indiana Pacers have a deep bench, which allows them to stay in games. And, it's runs, and all of a sudden at the end of the game, you're seeing one team down by seven, and then they're up by three. So it's just a war of attrition, and I think that game, I think it's actually going to go seven games, but I could be totally off.
Well, you know what? It's been one of the NBA series that apparently, unfortunately, has really, TV ratings-wise, kind of gone in the toilet. And that's not surprising. I mean, you have two Midwest teams. You don't have any star power. But, I'm sure everybody would agree. With streaming and next day rights, YouTube, everything, the ins and outs of this series are being seen. There's also so many different things going on with baseball, hockey. So, the NBA is generally used to just having the amazing spoils of TV ratings at this time of year, no matter who's playing. This year it's a little different. But if you're a basketball fan, if you're a basketball aficionado, even if you just like the game, it's something to watch. Style of Indiana this year, they call it space and pace up and down the floor, threes. It's kind of, you know, the new NBA basketball in the last couple of years. But I have a feeling, folks, that this is going to be perhaps one of the last years that you see it. Because once, you know, the Knicks were able to kind of slow down Indiana a little bit with some playing some bigs, you know, old-time basketball might be making a comeback. So if you're a big fan of the up and down shooting threes, you know, you should tune into this series, I think, because you might not see this style again for quite a while. You're going to see a little bit more of bench development, and we can, if we do get into that at some point about, you know, the firing of Tom Thibodeau, you know, because he didn't use his bench and all that stuff. But you know, anything is possible when it comes to the NBA. But, you know, I do believe firmly that if you are a basketball fan, don't worry about that the ratings are down and all that other stuff. I mean, it's great basketball being played out there.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And you got some good coaches on the sideline, too. It's interesting to see Carlisle.
Very underrated coach, I believe.
Very underrated, especially with the championship under his belt.
So speaking of the NBA Finals and the Indiana Pacers from the old ABA, we have one of the all-time greats from the ABA and the NBA, Hall of Famer, 72 Rookie of the Year MVP from the ABA, and back in that time, the Kentucky Colonels. Number 53, Artis Gilmore. Artis, Mike and Chris here in New York, welcome to the program.
Good day, gentlemen, Mike and Chris.
It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you for the invitation to join you.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. We're up here in New York, and a lot of people are sad that the New York Knicks were eliminated by the Indiana Pacers, but I'm sure you've had a little bit of extra interest in the NBA Finals this year.
Yeah, exceptionally, especially the Pacers, that franchise. You know, May 22nd, 50 years ago, we beat them in 75 for the ABA championship, so that connection absolutely allowed me to have a little extra interest in the series.
Absolutely. So, Artis, but we wanted to ask you, you know, and I'm sure you've been asked this question, you know, so many times. Coming out of college, you know, you were All-American at Jacksonville. You went to the Final Four, Final Series against UCLA. Had a great college career. And then when it was time to make a decision for professional basketball, you wound up playing in the ABA for Kentucky, for the Kentucky Colonels. You were drafted by the Chicago Bulls, but I think it was kind of known that you were going to the ABA, and Chicago took you very late in the seventh round, I guess, just to retain your rights. What was your thought process at that time with going to the ABA? Was it strictly a money issue at that time, or was it something else?
Oh, absolutely, financially. Thinking in terms of what I had experienced as a youngster growing up without, and certainly within a large, huge family, financial decision, absolutely, to be able to do some things for the family.
Well, your first contract, if I remember, was a 10-year deal, I think, at $2.5 million, somewhere in that range. So, you know, I'm sure that was unheard of money at that time, or, you know, it's life-changing money. And for a league to offer that to you coming out of college must have been, you know, just the icing on the cake. And the ABA, from everything that I remember, I'm a little older than my co-host. I'm in my mid-50s, so the ABA was one of the first leagues that I remember. It seemed like just a fun brand of basketball to play.
Oh, absolutely. I said we were Showtime before there was Showtime, you know. We had the three-point play, and we had some really extraordinary talent in the league.
Yeah.
The Dr. J and of course, the Iceman and Dan Issel. And it just was a impactful league during that time. And they brought about something kind of special, and that identity.
Again, we're talking with Artis Gilmore, Hall of Famer, ABA, NBA. So, Artis, about 15 years old, you're 6'5". You make a big jump, you know, to almost 7 foot. And Can you talk a little bit about being recruited out of high school? I know you had moved about 35 miles away from Florida to go to high school. What was it like being recruited, you know, to possibly play at the next level? Because you went to Gardner Webb and then to Jacksonville.
That's absolutely correct. I think that was part of that decision. Back in that era, in that time, the racism and just a very intense situation in the country forced me to leave. Well, once I left high school, I moved to Dothan. Now, you're right. A few miles up the road across the line in Florida. And I was able to finish high school at Copper High School. And because of the lack of academics and performance, decision was made to go to attend junior college, which was Gardner Webb at that time in North Carolina. And, of course, my colleague, dear friend, Ernie Fleming, who was from Fall River, Massachusetts, we made that decision. And then after attending Gardner Webb for 2 years, they were in the process of adding a third year. And so they were kind of requesting or asking Ernie and myself to extend ourselves and stay another year. And certainly be a part of the first graduating class. So they was moving forward, and Ernie and I, we decided to move forward, and we moved to Jacksonville because he had a connection with Joe Williams. And that sort of introduced me as well because we were real good friends. And then we both decided to come to Jacksonville, and he redshirted for 1 year, and of course, I was able to move forward and play in the finals against the UCLA in the championship game.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. We all wanted to ask you what it was like playing against that powerhouse, you know, UCLA. You know, such a storied school. There's varied opinions on how they were able to sustain. I mean, obviously they recruited great players and Coach Wooden, but did you go into that final with any kind of worry that you were playing this powerhouse team, or did you really believe you had a shot? Because the game by no means was a blowout.
No, we really felt that we felt very confident. We had beaten a number of teams that we were not supposed to beat, like Iowa and, of course, Kentucky. Everybody we played, of course, Jacksonville was considered, a nobody. Yeah. We're not compared to the teams that were participating in the finals during that time.
Yeah, very much a Cinderella story, for sure. So you go on, you go to the ABA, you have a standout career, you play for Kentucky. Kentucky, to me, if I remember correctly, was really one of the stronger franchises in the ABA. And when it came time for the ABA and the NBA merger, you know, San Antonio, Indiana, Denver, and the Nets are the four teams selected. But did you feel at that time, or what was the feeling in Kentucky? Did you think that you guys really had a strong chance of being another team that would merge with the NBA?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. We were very confident because of our ownership. We just assumed that there would be a fifth franchise, and that would include the Kentucky Colonels.
Again, we're talking with Artis Gilmore, Mike Guidon, Chris Caputo here. Artis, in college, you led the nation in rebounding two different years and finished with a career rebounding average of 22.7 rebounds. Can you talk about the art of rebounding and how that became one of the two or three major things that you did on a basketball court?
Well, defense blocking shots and certainly rebound, and that was an area that I really focused on. And so that allowed me that whenever my teammate, who was not a very good high field goal percentage, to get the rebound. Not really. But I really focus on rebounding because I knew that was an area that I would be able to make a difference for my team. And so with my skill level, I was able to elevate to where I was able to get rebounds. And in fact, one of my games I remember that I had like 40 something rebounds.
Oh,
you know, and yeah,
okay.
So
that's a career for some people.
Rebounding was an area that I really was a focus on, but not as far as, you know, the awareness of the statistics and, you know, the that area of the game.
Well, one thing that comes up as well and really sticks out in your stat line is, you know, I hate the word load management these days, and guys are, you know, playing half a season, 60 games. As I look in your career, take away the last season of your NBA career, only one time did you play less than 71 games. And I believe I'm looking at right now, 79-80, you played 48. I'm assuming you probably had an injury. But that is an unbelievable stat. What was your secret to staying healthy and playing in all those games?
Well, I guess.
Was it just the mindset?
Yeah, it was the mindset mostly, just focusing on just, I guess, kind of during that time, eating right, mm-hmm. getting enough rest, and just following the rules. And that was the one thing that allowed me the longevity.
Yeah. So you played with some tremendous players. Dan Issel was a teammate. You know, obviously, you played against Dr. J in the ABA and then the NBA. You played with George Gervin. We're going to ask you in just a minute about your Bulls experience a little bit later on in your career. But out of all those teammates that you played with, to ask you who was the best, I think, is probably just kind of a silly question. But whose game did you enjoy as a teammate? Who did you enjoy playing with the most?
I played half of the year with Michael Jordan, and
yeah.
I played half of the year with the Larry Bird, and
that's right. Yeah.
And of course, I had that fantastic, we had a fantastic couple of years together in San Antonio with George Gervin. So, you know, both Michael was accelerating. He was in his fourth year, the year and of course, the same with Larry Bird. Like Larry had more people around him, surrounding him, talent, than Michael had. And, of course, that one half of the year, they had just signed Scottie Pippen mm-hmm. and Horace Grant. So they was on that building platform, getting to that point where they was able to get past the Detroit Pistons.
So, Artis, your second trip around, you went back to the Bulls, and you're playing with Jordan and Pippen and things like that. What do you think your role was that second time around playing with some younger guys? Did your role change, or you feel like you still were, you know, score, rebound, make the easy shots, and, you know, shoot a high percentage, or did, you know, you become a different player?
Yeah, just an experienced player with leadership experience, and that was the one thing my intentions were to bring to that team at that time.
Artis, at 36 years old, you're playing for the Spurs. You're an all-star, you know, 71 games and then 82 games, 71. Your last season, as you mentioned, you played with Boston as well as Chicago, you know, 71 games. You're 38 years old, but you've proven what you can do, and you know, you're still a shot blocker, rebounder, great leadership, I'm sure, that you brought So at that point, were you thinking that it was time? I know you played one more season, I believe, overseas. Were you thinking that that was it for the NBA for you, or were you hoping to hook on? What was your thought process at that point? What were you thinking?
Yes, I really was thinking that I probably could. My body felt good that I could have extended another year helping somebody, you know, off the even coming up, certainly, most certainly thinking of coming off the bench and making a contribution for somebody.
Boston, when they brought you in, they didn't really have much discussion with you the year after about having you, because I would assume you were a perfect fit there.
Well, I was told that later on. Somebody said, I wish I would have known that you were interested in playing another year. We certainly would have made an attempt. I was told to me later, much later, but I had made that decision to experience that last year in Europe and taking my family for a cultural experience.
So, Artis, 1975 ABA Championships with the Kentucky Colonels. You were also named the ABA Playoffs MVP. Can you talk a little bit about that season and what it was like winning a championship at that point in your career?
Oh, boy, it was a pretty heavy load. certainly lifted because, you know, we had such a great basketball team, and we had allowed the championship to slip through our fingers a couple of times before. You know, we played the Pacers, we lost to them in the championship, and the year before, we were knocked out by Rick Barry and John Roach, who came in and played so well. Winning that championship in 1975 against the Pacers were, no question, a huge burden, you might say, because we were expected to win and years before, and of course we came up a little short.
In the final game, your stat line, 28 points, 31 rebounds. I would say that's
ready.
That was MVP worthy. That must have been just a tremendous evening for you, like you said, to kind of get all that pressure off yourself. You know, stat-wise, and we've gone through everything and all your accomplishments here so far, you were inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame April 2011. You know, you finished playing basketball around 1989, 1990. It seems like kind of a strange delay for you to wait a few extra years to be put into the Hall of Fame. Any reasoning for that that you can think of or that you were told or at that time, you know, was it just standard to kind of wait a couple of extra years? It's an interesting question.
No, I wish I had an answer to that.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Nothing changed my stats or anything, but. You know, I was really excited and happy when I was inducted received the call in April and inducted in the fall in 2011.
So, Artis, you know, the game, I feel, and at least in the NBA, has changed, and the big man's role has changed, and now they have to come out and guard pick and rolls and shoot three-pointers. How have you seen the game change since you left in the late 80s and the role of the big man? Because it's, I would say, went somewhat extinct and kind of came back in a different fashion.
Well, what has happened, the game is continuing to evolve, especially with the European or the international players with that kind of a talent. Able to shoot the ball from the perimeter and when the time years when we played, we had coaches yelling in your ear saying, you know, we're not hiring 7-footers to take shots from behind the 3-point arc. So it has been a different game and it is continuing to change and you have guys with an incredible skill level, like Stephen Curry, and now, you know, with what's the kid's name from Indiana?
Tyrese Halliburton.
Halliburton.
Yeah, Halliburton. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just incredible skill level where they're able to shoot from, you know, and you switch that around and look back when a few years ago when we played, if a player had taken one shot or two shots from behind the three-point arc, and he missed him, you know, he had a hook. He was going to set him to bed.
Exactly.
So when the rules changed and they brought a number of young coaches in and allowed the kids, the talent to kind of flourish rather than individualism, and that's when, and then so many European players brought their skill levels, especially the big men, and watching those guys be able to handle the ball. You know, I thought it was exceptional when I had my teammate in college, Rex Morgan, mm-hmm. Handling the ball on the perimeter, a big guy, and George Gervin, 6'7", and of course Magic Johnson, 6'8", and the way they handled the ball, and of course Larry Bird handled the ball from the perimeter.
Absolutely.
And guys have had that versatility. And coaches have been able to use them when they allow defense to pressure the guards and kind of run the clock down. So you had the big men to bring the ball up the floor. So, yes, the game has evolved and changed so many ways. And today, you know, you hear a number of the old veteran individuals say, you know, I don't like it. I love the old way, but if you look at the game and look at the skill level and what's happening, especially this series between OKC and the Pacers, it's just really exciting to watch and very entertaining.
Speaking of that series, how do you see it ending up? It's locked up at 2-2 now. Do you have a prediction about how it's going to go?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. As I said, I feel very kind of personally connected, especially watching the Pacers in a play. And 50 years ago, we competed against them and won the championship. And so that kind of a best connection that I have, and I would love to see them win the championship. But I believe OKC now, after coming in back and taking the edge, the home court advantage back from the Pacers, I really kind of feel that they have the edge at this particular point in time now.
I would tend to agree with you, and I think most people as well. But, Artis, before we let you go, I have to ask you one last question I've been dying to ask you. When I was a kid, my favorite TV show was The White Shadow. And you mentioned Carver High School that you went to, and that the high school in The White Shadow was Carver High School. You appeared on that show, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was kind of the surrounding connection was with the Chicago Bulls.
Right.
Coach
Reeves was a former Chicago Bull.
Yeah, right. I remember. And really, actually, they were taping part of the show in real, actual game. You know, he came out and in a uniform dress, and then later he came out. He had a cast and everything. He was actually sitting on a bench.
Yes.
Bench doing that.
So it was as realistic as it looked. Yeah.
So I had a connection there, and I really enjoyed making that appearance and just being a part of it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I was about 10 or 11 years old at that time, and I still remember that show was one of the things that got me into, you know, basketball, got me interested in coaching basketball. And you obviously made a big impression on me, because I remember you appearing in that show. And it's very interesting, you know, how Carver High School applies to you and both in that show. Artists, I'll tell you, we can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. I think if anybody needed, you know, 5 rebounds and 2 blocks, they could put you out there today for a couple of minutes and get that. We're Knicks fans. We would take that in a heartbeat, Artis.
Well, it's unfortunate. Jalen Brunson was a magnificent player.
Yeah.
But at that time, they just needed a little bit additional support from the other guys, you know, like Thompson. He was not consistent enough, and you know, you can't have a big man just fouling out of the ball game like the way he did. So, I think, you know, they're on the right track. Unfortunately, is that true? The coach has moved on.
Yeah,
they got rid of the coach, and they're still looking. They're trying to hire a coach from every other team, but they're not getting permission. So we'll see where that lands up. Artis, before we let you go, just give us an update as to what you've been doing, you know, since retirement and what you're up to right now.
Well, not very much. I love to find me a job working, but I've been told that after I become a senior citizen, that you're not allowed to find much work. And so I do broadcast a little bit of JU's game I have in the past, JU basketball, Ben's game. Mostly I do the home games, not on the road traveling. And then the other thing is right now I'm involved in charities. Whenever someone called me and asked me to play at a charitable golf tournament, you know, I try to. And not too many of those, especially ones that are traveling, so ones are close by, I'm able to do. And I got some friends I try to play golf once a week, but the doc's appointments interfere with that. And then the other thing is chasing my 3 grandkids, my 14-year-old twins and my 11-year-old boy. So those the things right now that keeps me moving forward.
And that seems like it would keep you going pretty busy.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Father's Day and hope you enjoy it as well.
Happy Father's Day to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. And happy Father's Day to you guys, Mike.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Naismith Hall of Famer Artis Gilmore, thanks again for joining the show. We'll be back in just a minute to talk a little bit of New York Islanders hockey here on Sports Talk New York.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the second half of WGBB Sports Talk New York. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Rodone, joined by my co-host, Chris Caputo. Just had a wonderful half hour with Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer Artis Gilmore. But now we're going to shift gears here a little bit and go to the ice. Not a lot of ice in the summertime, although it was cold today, but we're going to bring in our New York Islanders beat reporter, Johnny Sticks, John Santa Maria. John, welcome back to the program. How you doing?
Hey, a lot to catch up on for sure, gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely, for sure. When you talk New York Islanders, there are many things to talk about, and the first thing I think we'll start off with is the team welcomed a new general manager in the name of Matthew Darche.
Yes, so I think they did a very good job going through the whole search process, bringing in a lot of different people. John Collins and his team did a great job, both people who have done the job and who have never been a general manager before, but I think you both could agree with me on this one. The most important thing they got out of this whole search, I think you needed a new voice and a new perspective of things, and I think that's coming.
Yeah, and I think he's coming from a winner. You know, he's put together some good teams, and you know, I think the Islanders would be, you know, amiss if they weren't expecting a lot from him as well, right?
Yeah, I think the expectations going into next season should be find a way to get this team back into the playoffs. We'll talk about the coaching staff in a minute, but I think you know there is talent there. There's things you got to fix. There's always things you got to fix up every offseason, but it's just about the different perspective of things. And they're letting him have full control. And what I mean by that is they're putting a whole new coaching staff in Bridgeport. If they haven't determined yet certain people's roles in the front office. And we know there were reports out there that Chris Lamoriello, Lou's son, got a contract extension. To me, that doesn't mean anything because he could be a paid consultant for the next 2 years, and then if a team calls and says we want to hire him, the Islanders can have him free to go. So I don't read too much into any of that. Let's take it and give him some time to really get his feet wet with what's here. But you definitely should want to have a couple people who were with the team just for familiarity with what's been going on.
So he decides, coaching-wise, to stay with Patrick Waugh. Did make some changes in the assistant coach ranks. First of all, do you think that that was something that ownership told him, hey, listen, you know, we're going to keep Patrick, but you're free to have control, like you mentioned. You talked about Bridgeport, but with the big club, or do you think maybe your read is a little differently, maybe that he was told he could have whoever, and he just kind of clicked with Patrick Waugh?
Yeah, I believe that was the case, that they said if you want to make a change, you can. I'm sure they didn't want to. He apparently has 3 more years on his contract, but Darsh felt it was the right fit at the right time. They changed the coaching staff up, and if they're going to let Patrick do what he wants to do, I think this could be fine. I don't think he was able to do what he wanted to do because looking at it, the way Lou Lamoriello ran things the last couple of years, very similar to how Phil Jackson tried to run the Knicks, where he had his puppet on the bench in Derek Fisher, Kurt Rambis, all those guys, telling them to run the triangle offense. And then when Jeff Hornacek became the coach, as you guys will probably remember, he ran the triangle for a little bit, Phil departed, they changed systems. Other problems happened we don't need to go into right now, but it's the whole philosophy of the front office is not controlling what's going to happen on the ice properly anymore.
So, Darsh basically said on June 27th, expect the Islanders to pick at number one. Do you think that that's going to happen, that the Islanders will use that pick and find a good player out there that fits their system? Or do you think there's a chance, more than 50% chance, that they might trade that pick?
No, I think they'll hold on to the draft pick. I think they will pick Schaefer at number one. That is what my gut is telling me. The only way I do not think they make the pick is if somebody comes to them with the crazy offer that adds on to next year's draft, which is a little bit more deeper than this one. But other than that, I think they will pick Shaver. The question is going to be, do they try and find a way to add another pick in the top five? How they do that, I don't know. And are they pressured, in quotes, to go get Hagans here? But I don't think so. I don't feel like they're forcing that on him. I don't think the general manager would have took the job knowing if they were being controlled by the owners.
So just explain that a little bit for the people out there, why they might go for this kid. You know, what's his tie and would make sense here with the Islanders?
So James Hagans, he's from Hopkins. He's a Boston College player, would fit, lifelong Islander fan. We always know that this could be a good marketing strategy, bringing the hometown kid to the Islanders, a team he grew up with. Very similar to Tavares going home to Toronto and seeing the PJ's photos. We could see things similar like that again, but in a more positive way. But Shaver fits more of the needs of the team right now than Hagans does.
Yeah, I mean, we need that defenseman, two-way player, obviously leadership, character, very impressive.
And somebody who could be developed, too. And even talking about the coaching staff, one of the things that I think was key is that Benoit DeRozier, who Patrick Waugh brought in with him from Quebec, is going to stay as well, too. So we'll see what his role is going to be. But I actually was thinking, even back to that topic, too, that they were going to send him to Bridgeport, coach the Islanders down there, and get them ready for the big club. But, no, they're going to leave DeRozier up on the Islanders.
516-623-1240 is the number. Again, 516-623-1240. We're chatting with John Santa Maria on the state of the Islanders and the upcoming draft and new regime that is in. John, you mentioned about maybe, and Chris kind of followed up on this, about making a trade or to try to get back into the top five or top ten of the draft. If that happened, who would you see that's possibly, capable of bringing back that kind of haul? Are we talking like a Bo Horvat, someone of that level? Would you think that the team would be willing to part with a player of that status at the moment?
I don't think it would be like a Bo Horvat or a Matt Barzal, but I'm saying one of the larger contracts. Like, let's just say it was Ryan Pulak. Let's just make that up and say it was him. If a team, let's say like Utah,
okay,
wants a player and is willing to take on salary, and you do it straight up for the fourth pick, that's a situation where I see it happening. I really do not see. Utah's very close to the playoffs. They came very close last year. I could see them doing something like that for, let's say, a player like Seth Jones if Chicago wants to move on from. But I think we'll get a better answer on that and other potential moves from these teams when we get the final numbers of the salary cap.
Okay. So my other question to you along with that, John, is, the Islanders this year, just missing the playoffs, they have such solid goaltending. They have, someone to build around. So it's not like they need to go into a full reboot.
No.
Why would you do that anyway? Because you do. You have those pieces. One of the players that had a rough year, kind of underachieved, and definitely had a tough end was Anthony Duclair. Hard to come back, I would think, from just what happened there. Of course, when Matthew Darche was hired, they asked him a little bit about that situation. He said all the right things that he felt Duclair was going to, turn it around, bring it back. Based on what you saw and heard, with Duclair's interaction with Patrick Waugh and sitting there towards the end, do you think that relationship needs to change?
I definitely think they're both due for another chance. I think, honestly, Anthony Duclair was not healthy last year. And the injury he suffered in October, he never really recovered 100% from
it. That's a good point.
So I think the summer to recuperate, get back to training camp, it's going to come in with a different mindset. New assistant coaches, new leadership in the front office. Let's see what happens.
Bob Buffner, where did that one come from, assistant coach? I remember him fighting with, the Penguins and Sabres. Just that guy was just a big body. Where did that one come from?
Yeah, let's talk about both those guys. And I think let's start with Bob Bugner, however you say his name. I think that's how you say it. But former head coach in this league, I think that's very valuable for Patrick Watt to have on the bench, and a guy who's been an assistant for a bunch of years. Ignore some of the stats with both of these guys where their penalty kills and their power plays were. The same goes for Ray Bennett with the Avalanche. We know how talented that team is. I think Colorado was just due for a change on the bench. That guy's been with Jared Bednar since he walked into Colorado. This is all after Patrick Waugh left. Sometimes you need new voices even on teams that are competing for championships. So I think maybe Ray Bennett will bring some championship mindset here too.
Yeah, so what other moves do you think the Islanders might make? Is there somebody that maybe they look to shake up a little bit? Is the Barzal situation pretty set? Is Anders Lee possibly up for a little shakeup there? Or do you think the Islanders are just trying to build? I know they also picked up a guy at the trade deadline, so that's a guy they're looking to build around as well.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of interest for J.G. Pageau, and like I said with that, I think once we get the final cap number, we'll start hearing more about who could potentially be interested in. Right now, the rumor is the Bruins have expressed interest in trading for Pageau. He's on an expiring contract this year. I think Anders Lee, who is also on an expiring contract, will start the season with the Islanders. I do not think they'd like to move him right now. But if things change come February, March, after that Olympic break, based on when they decide the trading deadline is, his value could be, based on where the season is, his value could increase. And then the other name who could potentially be on the move. Shockingly, there is interest there, but this could also be for teams who got to meet the floor on the salary cap. Is there's potential interest in Pierre Engvall?
Right.
Okay.
So there's some interest there. You could get some draft capital back. Maybe if the Islanders want to, if they feel you draft Shaver number one, you want to bring Long Island Hagens home, you get enough cap relief for whatever, and some draft picks where you're not costing yourself too much in the future to maybe move up, get another first-round pick, take Hagens, the Cinderella story concludes at UBS, then something like that might happen.
Yeah, then you got to give yourself a couple of years before people expect major playoffs at that point.
No, I don't think the expectation is major playoffs. I think the expectation is to build something.
Yeah, build.
And to get back to, get back to the playoffs.
John, you mentioned the Olympics, and the Islanders were due to host the All-Star game, but I think that, unfortunately, was put on hold for a little bit. But they, correct me if I'm wrong, the franchise is going to host some lead-up and then apparently something later on in the future?
So in 2027, the All-Star game will be at UBS. Gary Bettman did announce that during the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
They did not say where the Olympic kickoff event will take place. Now that they said UBS will host an All-Star game in 27, so we'll see. Maybe that's something they do in the city near, like, league headquarters in, like, Penn State, Times Square area, Penn Station, where the NHL stores, you never know. They pick another destination, but as long as the Islanders are getting an All-Star game at some point, they got to get something there. It's been a long time since any league event has been here. I think the last league event in this area was the draft when the Prudential Center hosted way back when.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
And they've never gotten an All-Star game, surprisingly, too.
Yeah, that doesn't make...
And that's a great building.
It is. It doesn't make any sense that they haven't hosted anything. You know, maybe you're
And
on...
you got to remember something, too. You guys have... I think both of you have said you've been there, but those who maybe have not been there, there are a lot of hotels right around the arena and right around the train station.
Yeah, they did a nice job of cleaning that area up.
Yeah, they're still 100%. Still working on the Belmont track there, trying to get them back so that you have a...
one more year.
One more year.
One more year.
Get the stakes. Hey, John, after the first sweep the Mets just went through, what is your pulse of the New York Mets at this point?
I'm good. Tampa's very sneaky.
Yes, they're good. They're the best team since May 20th.
They're very sneaky. It's okay. All I can say is I think we're going to have playoff baseball at Steinbrenner Field.
Ah. Okay. Well, that's it. Listen, you're not way off because they certainly have shown, you know, that they're tough. And I was listening to who was it the other day? It's slipping my mind on MLB Network, but they were saying that just like you did, that Tampa is a very sneaky team. They're built for the long run. And, you know, don't be surprised if they once again, even under their circumstances, do come back and make the playoffs.
Yeah, and those people, I was actually down in Tampa this year when the Islanders played them, and those people were very excited about Steinbrenner Field, very happy the team's on that side of Florida. They didn't want them in St. Pete. They want a stadium built over there. So you hope this is the start of maybe the politicians figuring some things out, like we need baseball on this side of the city.
Yeah, I really hope so because they haven't gotten great support. But if you're familiar with that area, I've been down there a couple of times. You know where their stadium is, the roof got torn off of. It was. It's not in a great spot. It was one of the last of those circular kind of cookie cutter domes. There's no charm to it, and the people there, they deserve a little smaller, you know, dome stadium that can be in an area that's just easy to get to.
Yeah, the only thing that's tough with their schedule right now, and this is why this will be very impressive, and if this continues, I think Kevin Cash should be manager of the year in the American League just for this part. They're going to play a lot of their games in the second half of the year on the road. And this is done purposely because of the weather in Florida.
Yeah, that's true. Well, if they do what they did to the Mets on the road, they'll be just fine. John Santa Maria, again, thanks a lot. We will definitely have you on in a couple of weeks when the NHL draft takes place to see where the Islanders went, if they made any deals, and talk a little preseason because before you know it, the guys will be back on the ice. The pucks will be dropping. And we also
– We're going to have rookie camp
this summer. Yeah, rookie camp. And another area of expertise for you, the New York Jets. We'll be talking about them. Lots to talk about there. But, John, thanks for joining. All the best, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, John All right. Santa Maria, our Islanders, Jets, a little bit of Mets expert in there. Yeah. But he brought up some good points with the Islanders for sure. You know, I didn't think of them going a little deeper in the draft, but it does make sense. But it's certainly, I think you brought that up, Chris, that if they do make a trade and, you know, bring in another draft, young draft kid, it's going to be a little bit of a time before you can expect anything big.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of message that sends, but people would then have to be patient.
Yeah, and you know, they did have a little bit of an issue with attendance this year. It's gone down. You know, the building is great, and we've spoken about this, you know, till our ears are bleeding about the stadium's great, but getting there is still not easy. The cost of things there is just it's tough. You know, I'm a full disclosure, I'm a quarter season ticket holder. Would I like to move to half season? Yeah, I mean, my schedule honestly doesn't really kind of allow for it at the moment, but would I like to have, you know, another couple of games? Two years ago, it was easy to sell the ticket. This year, not so much.
Mike, it's hard for me because they don't allow the Islanders to play games before 7:30.
Yeah.
And that's 7:30 versus 7 o'clock start. It makes you get out of there at 10 o'clock trying to find a 10:30 train home. Now you're looking at 11:30. Makes it late. If you could start those games at 7, cut it 2 or 3 minutes off in between periods, you know, you could get out of there at a decent hour. It's tough.
Yeah, when you're talking about taking the train, I mean, unless you – and even hopping on the bus – the shuttle bus.
The shuttle bus. Well, bus on the way back, you got to walk.
Yeah, it's a 10-minute walk, and you got to hope that you get there. It's tough. It's something that it's fun. It's something that will be addressed. I'm hoping that they become a little bit more fan friendly. I literally get an email after every single game.
Sure.
You know what can you do? And I fill them out, and everything. I'm not cheap. You know, and I'll go there and I'll get a drink and something else. But if you're going to go, I'm sure, you know, you take your son, you take your daughter. If you take them and you get them a meal and you say, you're talking $200.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, you're not buying filet mignon either.
No, that's all you're getting. So as we got a couple of minutes left, I'm going to ask one question. You could take it where you want after that. We're sitting here watching the NBA Finals.
Okay.
Okay. If the Knicks won game one of the NBA Finals, there's a pretty good chance they're in the NBA Finals.
Yes.
They're not. The team that beat them is tied 2-2, has a pretty good chance of winning the NBA championship. And after all that, the Knicks decided to get rid of their head coach. In my mind, did not have a plan in place. If they did, whatever thought they had, they hit a wall at some point. What is going on and what is the plan? At some point, do the Knicks have to go back to Tom Thibodeau and beg for him to come back? Because you can't make Rick Brunson the coach.
No.
That would be absolute upheaval.
No.
But where are they going? This is a situation that needs to be resolved soon. And I just want to know eventually what your opinion is, who you think they're going to get.
Well, this has James Dolan written all over it.
Of course it does.
I mean, I
can hear Mike Francesa say it one way and Chris Russo say it the other way. This has the owner all over it.
Of course. I mean, I've had this conversation with some guys at work, too. I mean, you don't fire your coach and then say, hey, we're going to call six or seven other...
You have agents that you're talking to.
I mean,
to.
It's,
come on.
Apparently, James Dolan sat in on the exit interviews of all the players, which is not unheard of, but he did. And he must have heard some things that he didn't like.
They didn't practice late-game situations.
I don't know. But, you know, guys complaining about playing too many minutes. I mean, heck, I would have, you know, as a basketball player, I mean, I know it's different, but who doesn't want to play? But I feel like he just said he turned into like Jerry Jones all of a sudden. You know what?
Yeah.
We made the conference finals. Not good enough. Get rid of the coach. We got, instead of saying, hey, look at what we've done.
Yeah.
So it's asinine what they did.
Okay.
Where they go, who they get. Boy, I'm going to say Mike Malone.
Mike Malone.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say they eventually go to him.
I think bottom line, eventually they get Jason Kidd.
Really?
I think eventually they wind up batting down the walls. And
okay.
That's, you know, somebody makes that decision. I could be wrong, and maybe they go in a different direction, but I just think at some point they're going to. The problem with that is you got to give up stuff.
Exactly.
You got to give compensation for what? For a guy you didn't really even want?
I know, and it's going to cost a lot. And I'm not a huge Jason Kidd coach fan. I think he's very overrated. I did not like what he did with the Nets. He was basically just standing there while his assistants drew up plays, but who knows? But yeah, it's such a shame, such a feel good year. And now, you know, it's back to a circus in the garden. But great show. Thanks again. Artis Gilmore, Hall of Famer, Naismith Hall of Famer, John Santa Maria, Brian Graves is always behind the glass doing a great job. Cap, happy Father's Day to you and everybody out there.
Same to you. Enjoy. Hopefully the weather starts to turn. We talked about this in the past. Let's hope the weather starts to turn. Get out to some games. Enjoy it. School will be ending, and we'll be talking soon.
I can't wait for that. We'll tell you. All the best, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks, everybody, on Sports Talk New York.
Not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9 Freeport, New York.